it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 311. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, we'll recap a disappointing series against the San Diego Padres at Citizens Bank Park. We'll take a look at the up-and-down offense in this series. Who's hot, who's not? There's some very much who's not, but also some very much who's hot. And we had a little bit of an injury scare with Bryce Harper on Sunday, but luckily everything is okay there. We'll take a look at a couple of pitchers who are absolutely giving the Phillies problems, and they may be the biggest reasons this team has not been able to sustain anything this year. We'll get into some injury talk. Doing all that with me, as he does every Sunday night, is the head guy at The Good Fight. His name is Justin Clue. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how you doing, buddy? Have you recovered from Liz's wedding this weekend?
We made it. We made it through the wedding weekend, and we made it through that intro. And yeah, honestly, that's the best. I think the best we could have hoped for.
Yeah.
Is that we made it.
Yeah, we made it. The intro was nip and tuck. I think, though, I'm sure the wedding went better than the intro, first aborted intro we had to do before we restarted here.
Yes. And as I'm sure everyone knows, the former site manager, mm-hmm. Supreme Blogstress, and for a member of this show's recurring cast, Liz Rozier got married this weekend.
Yes.
And a bunch of us got to be there, and mm-hmm. I got to officiate the ceremony, and it was just as Phillies themed as you'd expect. I left there with quite a few Phillies baseball cards in my pocket.
That's
available,
right.
on the tables, just for just grab that. They entered after the procession and the ceremony, they entered into the reception to the Sixers theme song.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which was a highlight.
Yeah. And I was supposed to go, and a cacophony of crap happened over the course of the week that prevented me from being able to make it up there. So I was bitterly disappointed I wasn't able to make it up for the wedding, but it sounds like
John is the reason
time.
We didn't do a live from a wedding podcast episode.
Yeah.
Everyone, so you have him to thank for missing that.
Yeah, I'm totally the villain, and it was unfortunate, but it sounds like it was a great time. Congratulations to Liz and to Sean, Liz will hopefully have on here next week or whenever she's able to join us. But in the meantime, it'll be just Justin and I, and we'll be taking you through what went down this weekend at Citizens Bank Park. And geez, I mean, if you haven't caught, by the way, for those of you listening, if you haven't listened to the latest episode of Continued Success that Justin did with Chris Jones, when they reacted in real time to the Bryce Harper Grand Slam, you're absolutely missing out. It's at like the 42-minute mark of the latest edition of Continued Success, and it's amazing. And after that game, after that series wrapped up, Justin, it really kind of felt like this team might get on a roll. Especially after they won the opening game against the Padres on Friday, it really felt like this team might be starting to get some momentum going. Another four-game winning streak. They were looking to, for the first time this year, have a five-game winning streak, and they got up 3-0 in the game on Saturday and then went to the tank again, and the Phillies blow a golden opportunity to take a series they had to win. They had to win this series against an absolutely terrible Padres team. A Padres team that came into the series at 56-64, 8 games under .500. They had been in a free fall over the last couple of weeks. And that's the most disappointing here, Justin, is that this team is just not able to sustain success. The last two times the Phillies have won 4 in a row, their next series was a series loss, first to the Marlins and now to the Padres. I mean, we look at the strength of schedule, and the Phillies go and they sweep the Cubs in a 3-game series, and then they lose 2 out of 3 to a team like the Padres. That's why for the rest of the year, I'm not looking at strength of schedule, because with this team, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it seems like their success is almost random, that there's like a switch somebody's accidentally bumping on their way out of the clubhouse every day, and whether or not that happens determines what happens on the field, which team is going to show up. Because that team that played the Cubs, I mean, that was the kind of team we've been waiting to see all season long. And, every time the Phillies finish another disappointing game, we hear from Gabe Kapler, another disappointing series, hear from Gabe Kapler saying, hey, we're going to, we know we've been struggling. I know this team is good. We're gonna turn the corner. We're gonna get there. But with each passing day, I mean, we're into late August now. The amount of time you have to turn things around is smaller at the end of every 9-inning increment.
Yeah.
And it becomes less and less believable that the Phillies are even going to have the real estate to do the amount of winning they need to do, let alone the fact that they seemed primed to break that win, that top season win streak of four
wins in a row,
and did not do that. They just matched it, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Sweeping the Cubs in the one game against the Pirates. So, you know, and that's what's been hurting this team. That's what we've been talking about this whole time. You mentioned the reaction to the Grand Slam that Chris and I had that was like, yeah, that was so much fun. And afterwards, you're just reflecting on that, thinking like, where's this been? And I don't even mean like from the team. Like, apparently that's just going to come and go whenever it wants. It's more just like, that's another reason this team has felt a little distant, you know, because there's been a lack of memorable moments. When you're just losing, you're not really remembering the losses specifically. It's just kind of this blur of disappointment for a couple of months now. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, what was the last thing that happened in a Phillies game in 2019 that I actually remember, you know, at all, or that I would go back and watch clips from? Because we're a bunch of clip junkies on this show. We can easily get swept up into a YouTube binge of watching old Phillies clips.
Yeah.
And that, you know, what does this team have to offer in that regard? So like that Grand Slam was cinematic. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And this team has just been short on moments like that. And we got to celebrate for like one series. The Phillies looked like the better team against a team that they weren't necessarily better than. And they just have not done that this season. And you know, look, here we are. Here we are on another Sunday night talking about how they couldn't beat a beatable team. They couldn't hold up against the pressure of sustaining the success that they seemed on the verge of finally having. And now here we are. It's late August. When are they going to win five games in a row? When are they going to catch anybody? When are they going to hold off the teams that are managing to get hot behind them? And this is what we come back to every time. There's been no proof that they're a team that's capable of that. And, you know, if you don't let yourself enjoy series like the Cubs games, you're going to go crazy. So it is like, I didn't want to trust them, but you wanted to have fun, you know, you wanted to celebrate it. But at the same time, in the back of your head, it's like we talked about last week. You're thinking about, okay, well, what does this mean next? Because this success at this point in the season means nothing if it's in a vacuum.
Yeah, we're going to enjoy that moment. We're going to look back on that moment, and we're going to remember it in its moment for what it was, one of the most thrilling wins in recent memory. But we've talked about it, and you've talked about it in recent podcasts. How can they, you know, how much does that moment mean if you don't sustain it? If you can't duplicate it moving forward? And it was a big deal to sweep the Cubs in those three games and make up that kind of ground in 3 days. They made up three games in 3 days against the Cubs and tied them in the standings. And now, after losing two in a row and the Cubs finishing off a sweep of the Pirates, the Phillies are back to just four games over 500. And they're two games behind the Cubs for the second wild card spot. They're tied with the Brewers and the Mets. The Giants are just one game behind those three teams, and the Diamondbacks are two games behind everybody else and four games behind the Cubs. So, you know, that's the thing. You work so hard to sweep that series against the Cubs and you draw even with Chicago and you win that first game against San Diego and you're tied for the wild card again, and then you lose two winnable games. The first game in which you had a 3-0 lead and Zach Eflin and Nick Pivetta blow it, and we'll get to those guys in just a second. That's what's just, it's so disappointing that this team can't continue to sustain any kind of success. A lot of it comes down to the starting pitching, again, Zach Eflin in this particular case, and again, we'll talk about that in just a minute. But, you know, the offense was disappeared in these last two games, and we were feeling really good about Charlie Manuel after the Harper slam and after the first game against San Diego. I kept seeing signs in the stadium, it's hitting season, which, I mean, I love that. That was fantastic. I'm hoping
people
accidentally Google search hitting season and stumble upon the podcast. But today the Phillies were held to four hits or less for the 20th time this season, second most in the majors. Only the Blue Jays have been held to four hits or less more this year. In the final two games, they scored five runs and had 10 hits total. And they rank last in the National League since the All-Star break with runners in scoring position at .228. Even with all of the home runs that they hit against the Cubs, they were 3-for-13 with runners in scoring position on Saturday and Sunday. Against the Cubs, they were hitting a lot of multi-run home runs, and that's just not something we've seen from this team this year. Those disappeared in the last two games against the Padres, but as we saw, Justin, even just in these last, I guess, six games or so, since Charlie Manuel officially started sitting in the dugout as the team's hitting coach, Manuel got the success for the victories. And on my timeline, Kapler's been getting the blame for these last two losses. They're directionless behind Gabe Kapler. You knew that's how this was going to go.
Yeah, we could see that it was just so obvious that that was going to
happen. You knew it.
If the Phillies had any kind of success after Charlie Manuel came in, he was going to be the reason for it. But, I mean, you know, that's happened with any acquisition the Phillies have made and then seen a direct amount of success. It's obviously the correlation is going to be made, just in some cases, out of fun. But, you know, you saw, you did see, you know, a serious contingent of people who were like, oh, see, I told you. The Phillies are ditching analytics and going with their gut with Charlie Manuel, and everything's fixed, and it's totally fixed. And there's just nothing realistic about that sentence. There's just no part of that's real. It's fun to like think. It's just eventually people just start thinking of these things in such broad strokes. And Gabe Kapler has come to be defined in the way that he is defined. And Charlie Manuel is a beloved figure in this city. Blah, blah, blah. Yes, they hated, you know, they didn't like Charlie when he first got here. And yes, the parallels are all there. But at this point in history, it's Charlie Manuel is a World Series winning, beloved manager of the Phillies. And Gabe Kapler has sat at the helm of two teams that have soared into first place and then plummeted ever so deeply out of first place. And, you know, you're gonna start criticizing what it is a manager like that represents. And so it's a very new school, old school thing that has surfaced. And it's, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, we could sit here and break it down as you did with Angelo Cataldi on the WIP morning show. That's exactly who I expect to be hosting this debate at this point in time. Like that's where that lives. Yeah. The idea that, oh, see, the Phillies just need this old school approach and they'll be fixed. And the truth is that it's going to take more than a change in hitting coach to fix this team. I talked about this with Liz a little bit about how, or with Chris a little bit about how this, bringing in Charlie Manuel was another pretty deft trade deadline move, really, that the Phillies didn't have to give anything up for. Got them huge name recognition. They didn't get any of that from their acquisitions at the trade deadline, who were actually players. But they brought in a new hitting coach who was beloved by fans. Who look how much impact he had on fan enthusiasm. Like the games against the Cubs happened right afterward was a big, you know, that helped a lot too. But bringing in Charlie Manuel, I think, set more ripples through this fan base than any Drew Smiley or Corey Dickerson or anything like that. So, you know, that was a smart move from a PR standpoint. Yeah. So I totally get that.
Yeah. And the place felt electric this week with Charlie back.
Yeah. I mean, that game where they broadcast, the TV broadcast was behind the Phillies dugout. Chris Wheeler was back.
That was cool.
Cole Hamels was here. Like, it was, I said on Twitter, it felt like the fourth movie of a beloved trilogy just because it felt like there were a lot of, you know, trying to stir up those same emotions while still having you think about the future. So it's like Hamels versus Nola, the past and the future. And Chris Wheeler's making a cameo and Charlie Manuel's here. And so there was enough there to echo from the past while also trying to get you excited about the future. And at this point, it's just a last-ditch effort for this team to be like, no, we are the team you thought we were. And then they had to play the Padres and they're just not again. So I don't know. I mean, you don't have to feel stupid for getting excited about a cool baseball game. You don't have to feel stupid about being excited that Charlie Manuel's back just because the team isn't performing isn't performing at the level they were expected to or should be playing at. You know, they're just not. We're going to hear after the season is over probably a bunch of reasons we don't know about now about why maybe things weren't working. Maybe guys are hurt. Maybe culture isn't great. Maybe people aren't, you know, maybe people are disagreeing with stuff. Who knows?
Maybe people are playing Fortnite again.
Right. Yeah. You know, we didn't find that out until after the season. So there's stuff we do know, there's stuff we don't know, and it'll probably all come to the surface eventually. But at the moment, this team is just a really disappointing baseball team, and I don't think there's any reason to believe they're going to break free of that reputation between now and the end of September.
Right. You know, and the conversation that I had with Angelo, he was responding to a piece I wrote in The Good Fight, basically talking about the fact that hiring Charlie Manuel specifically does not mean a departure from analytics. And they're not going to depart from the analytic
Of course
that they've that
think
they've
of all
set.
The things they've invested in that at this point. Like they're gonna just like sever their ties with Driveline, like just forget all of that.
It's
just
not
because they brought Charlie Manuel back, a guy whose forward thinking and hitting philosophies is comparable to analytics.
Right? Like, no, that's right, and that's the thing. It's like Charlie Manuel believes in the same thing. He believes in hitting the ball hard. He believes in hitting the ball in the air, and he believes in hitting it, you know, in the gaps in center field. And that's what I was explaining. It's like when Charlie Manuel talks about hitting the ball hard, he's talking about exit velocity. When he talks about hitting the ball in the barrel of the bat, he's talking about barreling. When he talks about not hitting ground balls, he's talking about launch angle. Now, he's not using those words, and that's the thing. I think it's how the Phillies use this information that has been their problem so far. I thought one of the things I also mentioned was when Gabe Kapler was talking to Angelo on the morning show this week, and they were asking about the whole Alex Rodriguez thing, Rodriguez calling him out for pitching to Pilar, even though Pilar was hot and Crawford was cold, all that, and Kapler was telling Angelo that, well, you know, we don't look at who's hot and who's cold. We look at a longer sample size, and Pivetta versus Pilar is the better matchup when you look at their history. And it's you're using one set of numbers against another set of numbers, one set of data against another set of data. It's what you choose to use, and I don't think you should discount who happens to be hot at this moment. Rhys Hoskins is hitting .098 since July 31st. Are you pitching around him if you fall behind 3-1 right now? Of course you're not, even though maybe over the course of a year and a half, Rhys Hoskins against a certain pitcher may have pretty good numbers. There are times you need to look at recent trends. You know, who's been hot over the last six games, who's been cold over the last seven games or something like that. They chose not to use that particular set of data. It doesn't mean all analytics is wrong. It means sometimes you use the wrong stuff. And that's what I'm trying to get through to people who are anti-analytics. It's the Red Sox, the Astros, the Cubs, the Dodgers, these great teams use this stuff. They just know how. The Phillies just don't seem to know how right now. So Charlie Manuel being in the dugout is not a repudiation of analytics. It's just we need to find a different messenger for this stuff. And maybe it is to say, let's hold off on some of the numbers right now and let Charlie kind of get in there with his folksy draw and get hitters to feel more relaxed at the plate. These last two games, it didn't matter. They looked a whole lot like the pre-Charlie Manuel Phillies in these last two games against San Diego, though.
Sure. I would love to know what the difference is that made the Phillies just absolutely play with their hair on fire against the Cubs. I would love to know what brought that on, because I'm sure it's a lot of little things that maybe the players can't even explain.
Yeah.
But it's almost certainly not something that Charlie Manuel came in, pulled down like a projector screen, started pointing at stuff in the clubhouse and was like, all right, hit the ball with the bat. Uh-huh. Like that's, it makes sense. You know, like that, nothing like that happened. So yeah, I think, but that's the thing. Like when I say that bringing in Charlie Manuel was the biggest acquisition the Phillies made at the trade deadline, it's because it creates that conversation. It's because he is such a presence that you can't believe he's not going to impact this offense in a positive way. At this point in the season, we're ready to cling to just about anything. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'm glad he's back. That game was a lot of fun. But, I mean, again, like as we know, as probably anyone listening to this podcast knows, there's only so much difference that he's going to make. And he's certainly not there to unplug the supercomputers.
Right. That's right. Phil will live on. One of the guys he has to get right is Rhys Hoskins. And, man, the Twitterverse is not kind to Rhys Hoskins. Although, when is the Twitterverse kind to anyone? I mean, let's be honest here. This is not the place to go to for positive reinforcement. But
boy, that pile of razor blades is sure in a bad mood today.
Yeah. He's in another massive cold streak. For the first time all season, his on-base percentage has dropped below .380 for the season, which is an incredible number when you think about it. That's still a terrific on-base percentage. But since July 31st, he's hitting .098, Justin. 098 since July 31st. He has one home run and two RBIs over that 18-game span. Johnny Heller from Phillies Nation tweeted this stat out. This stat is insane. Since August 4th, Rhys Hoskins has three hits and an .070 batting average. That's 56 plate appearances. Phillies pitchers in 25 plate appearances, a little less than half, they have four hits with a .190 batting average. Phillies pitchers have one more hit than Rhys Hoskins since August 4th in half the plate appearances right now. I don't know what it is about Rhys Hoskins, how he can go from seeing the ball so well and being a guy who can do so much at the plate to just getting lost, completely lost. And the thing is, look, it happens. It happens with Rhys Hoskins. This is who he is. He's still a really, really good baseball player. I think he can be a very effective four-hitter, five-hitter on this team. But when he's going like this, they've got to stop putting him at the top of the lineup. It's no shame to Rhys Hoskins to move him down to six or seven when he's an automatic out like this. I mean, I don't understand the obsession with batting Rhys Hoskins one or two when he's in a massive funk like this, Justin.
Yeah, when he's not showcasing the instincts that would, you know, you could possibly make the argument for him to be at the top of the lineup like that, then I don't know if, I mean, that's, again, if we're talking about new school versus old school, that's kind of like a more old school approach to like, well, maybe this will shake the cobwebs out.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Maybe this will just change things up for him just by giving him a different perspective. I mean, no, he's still got to go out there and stare at the same distance between the mound and the plate. You know, he's still got to put the bat on the ball in the same way. He's just got to do it first. So, yeah, I think I agree with you that moving him down in the order is going to be more beneficial, I guess. But at the same time, nothing's going to work if he can't get his head right. And at this point, even a guy who's as streaky as Rhys Hoskins, he's got to be in his own head about this. And after the Phillies hired a mental health skills coach, I started thinking more and more about that component to players' approaches. And it just seems like we've seen a lot more streaky players come into Philadelphia in the past couple of years. Guys who are in key roles, who are, when they're on, they're really on. And guys like when they're Rhys Hoskins, they're hitting 113 in August. I mean, that is a shocking statistic you just read to me. Maybe look back at his numbers for the past, like even just in the month of August, and it's, yeah, he is out. He is a non-factor. And that first game they won against the Cubs, that 4-2 to win, mm-hmm. that 4-2 win, he struck out four times.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not, that's, even when he's bad, he doesn't strike out a whole lot.
Yeah, no, he's so lost right now that he's, and you know, a day off maybe wouldn't kill him. They have Logan Morrison up on the team. He could play first.
I'd give him a series off.
Yeah, like, man. it's one of those things. He's, and you talk about the streaky nature of Phillies hitters. Corey Seidman tweeted this out today about Gene Segura, who's hot again. Gene Segura's first 162 plate appearances this year was hitting .316 with a .358 on base. His next 162, .215 with a .263 on base percentage. And now over the last 162, .322 with a .374 on base percentage. I mean, up and down, up and down. And two guys who are red hot right now had been cold most of the season, but now are smoking the ball. And these are two guys the Phillies need to do this is Harper and Realmuto. And we're going to touch on these two guys because Harper, you know, we also got a little news about Harper on Sunday. He had to leave the game due to dehydration. Thankfully, nothing too serious. So we'll give you a little bit more on Harper and Realmuto and getting into some pitching stuff as well. That'll be up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, Justin, we talked about Rhys Hoskins in the last segment, a guy who is ice cold for the Phillies, and mentioned some of the up-and-down nature of a lot of these guys in the lineup. Let's talk about a couple of guys who are red hot right now. Let's start off with Bryce Harper. And obviously, the Grand Slam is the high point on his season right now. But over his last 10 games, coming into Sunday, hitting .289 with 7 homers in his last 10 games and 17 RBIs. His outfield defense has also been a big plus. He threw out another base runner on Sunday. It's his ninth outfield assist this year. That's equal to the amount he had combined in 2017 and 2018 right now. And I was bitching and moaning about Bryce Harper a couple of weeks ago because, you know, he'd had some big moments. And when you look at wins probability added, it's an advanced metric stat that basically looks at the kind of hits that batters are getting. If hitters are getting big hits in clutch moments and a team's percentage chances of winning jumps up a big amount, like a late inning home run that puts your team from behind to ahead, you get credit for it with what's called win probability added. It's a pretty cool statistic. It's not predictive of anything. It just shows you how many clutch hits a guy has gotten that particular year. And Bryce Harper is in the top four of National League hitters in that particular stat. He's gotten a lot of big hits this year, but he just hasn't had the kind of impact I think a lot of us expected. His numbers, his overall counting stats were down a little bit. Well, now all those numbers have shot up. He looks like he's on pace for now 34 or 35 homers, 120 RBIs. You'll look at this season now if he finishes with those numbers and say, this is a damn good season. This is exactly what we paid for. It's a good thing. I mean, losing him, I can't imagine what losing him to an injury for any length of time would have done to this lineup had it not simply been dehydration. What were you feeling when you found out it was just dehydration?
I think our imaginations ran pretty wild.
Yes.
You know, a guy leaves a game like that. I mean, that was the last thing. And then it felt like for a player of Harper's high profile to not hear anything, like as time was going on, you know, Adam Haseley came up having replaced him. And I think we thought, okay, we'll get some kind of update from the broadcast now. And no, didn't hear anything.
Nothing.
So it kind of leads you to assume the worst. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to hear it was dehydration, I was immediately like suspicious. But, you know, the Phillies put up a story on their website about him leaving with dehydration, and they talked to him about it, and he described, you know, hey, yeah, I couldn't see in front of my face.
He had double vision, splotches. Apparently.
I mean,
yeah,
that's scary. That something's scary. Happened, and you don't know what it is, and you can't see. And as Mark Feinsohn wrote in the story, he was like, he said the blurriness began in the fourth inning, which is staggering given that he threw Austin Hedges out at second as he tried to, like, it's incredible. But, I mean, you're right. That's worrying. For a lot of reasons, but mostly because as underwhelming as we've been by some of the stats Bryce Harper's put out this year, in wins, when the games the Phillies have won, 63 at this point, he hits 280 with a 1009 OPS. And when they've lost in 59 games, he's at 220 with a 692 OPS. So when he's not on this team, they don't do as well.
That's a great stat. Yeah. Right, he's their most important player. I mean, and JT Realmuto is the other guy who has really picked it up. That's been enormous to have him hitting in the middle of the lineup right now. 13 extra base hits in 56 at-bats this month for Realmuto. He's hitting .357 in August with 13 RBIs. And in his last 22 games, he's batting over .338 with 8 homers, 21 RBIs. His last 7 home runs have come at Citizens Bank Park. This is kind of what we thought when he would getting him out of Miami and getting him into Citizens Bank Park, his homer total would jump up. He had been in such a homer drought throughout the whole season until these last couple of weeks. And so people are, I love the Johnny-come-latelys of, who's ripping on Harper now? Who's ripping on Realmuto now? You know what? It was fair to kind of rip on these guys at certain points this season when the production was down. Yes, when you hit a bunch of home runs in a row, the projected numbers are going to look better. But it's
I'd love to know who on Twitter specifically has just been sitting quietly waiting for someone to succeed so they could call out their critics. As if this hasn't been there's been perfectly merited reasons to complain about just about everybody. No, not just about.
Everybody
in this Phillies lineup at some point or another, totally warranted and totally correct. Of course, you can go the entire, over the top way complaining about them too, but to act like, oh yeah, well, you were wrong. It's baseball. Bryce Harper specifically is going to be here for 13 years. You think any status he reaches at any time is going to last for the rest of his playing career? No, he's going to be going up and down a whole lot. And this year specifically, there's a lot of excitement about his arrival and he hasn't been the MVP. So obviously that's going to get some scrutiny. It's great to see him playing like this now, but man, it would have been nice to see this Bryce Harper back in June or something.
Yeah, no, and he's had, like I said, he's had some big hits when they, like you mentioned, that's a great stat. When they've won games, he's been a big part of it, but he's also played very poorly in the games they've lost. And, maybe you could say that for every star player in baseball. I don't know, but it seems particularly true of Bryce Harper. I did think this was interesting. Looking at Fangraph's wins above replacement, JT Realmuto among National League WAR leaders. Cody Bellinger is at number one at 6.7 wins above replacement. Christian Yelich, number two, 6.5. Starling Marte is at 5.6. And then Realmuto is tied for fourth with Anthony Rendon and Ronald Acuna Jr. Obviously, he had been in around three, in the low three, 3.5, mostly because of his defense. But now with the offense catching up, he's now tied for fourth amongst National League hitters in wins above replacement. So, I think a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about JT Realmuto, I saw a lot of people talking about the trade wasn't worth it for Sixto, the Sixto Sanchez, Jorge Alfaro trade. And every time you hear about Sixto Sanchez having a big win in Double A and striking out 10 guys in 6 innings, you're like, oh man, that is tough to, it's tough to read that. But now we're seeing what JT Realmuto can do. And I am surprised, Justin, that an extension hasn't been agreed to as of yet. I would have thought, like at the beginning of the season, if you'd have asked me when the Phillies might sign an extension with Realmuto, it would have been during the course of this season, and maybe they've just tabled it until after the season is over. But they have to re-sign him, don't they? They have to get him to an extension at some point here. I think we've talked about that before. It's a no-brainer.
Have to is exactly right in this case. I always think that's a little hyperbolic, but in this case, the Phillies absolutely have to sign JT Realmuto to an extension. They gave up their top prospect, and it doesn't really matter if Sixto Sanchez works out or not. And just I'm just as rattled every time we see a success story from Sixto in the minors, because it's like, damn, he's cool, and it'd be so great to be looking forward to seeing his debut as a member of the Phillies. But you want to be able to comfort yourself with the fact that they acquired the best catcher in baseball in exchange for their top prospect, and that's always what that was going to cost. The upgrade they got going from Alfaro to Realmuto, as has been stated and restated, is colossal. Jumped up from like, you know, bottom of the pack at one position to the top, the very top. And yeah, again, he hasn't been lights out the entire season, but he's also now having a pretty special season based on exactly what you're talking about. And for that reason, they need to sign him to an extension, because they gave up too much to just watch a guy disappear after 2 years and have nothing to show for it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They do not have the boon of a persistently fertile farm system to be giving up prospects like Sanchez for a guy like JT Romeo for a 2 year rental. You know, like, yeah, they're not going to win the World Series this year. So basically, they'll have if Real Muto were to be here 2 years, there's like one more chance to kind of make a deep playoff run with the best catcher in baseball, and then watch him go somewhere else. I mean, yeah, there's just too much. They gave up too much to not make him a part of this team for years to come.
Let's get into the pitching a little bit here, Justin. And I was feeling really good about this team on Saturday when they got up 3-0. And the Phillies took early leads in each of the three games in this series. And when they got up 3-0 again with a JT Realmuto home run, it really felt like they were on their way. It just felt like they were rolling.
I think the problem is they play too much baseball in a week. I think they need to do it like football and just play the one game so we can feel good about that for a full week before getting disappointed again. This 24-hour thing is just, no, it's not healthy.
It wasn't enough. We needed to be able to live off that Harper Grand Slam for a full week. There's no doubt about it. You're right, 100%. It was, baseball sometimes is great that they play every night. This is one of those weeks where it would have been good for 3 or 4 rainouts in a row just to live off that a little bit. But because Zach Eflin entered the picture on Saturday, and then the body got heavy, and the ball started finding a lot of open spaces. And I think, as I thought about, you know, all the different reasons why this team might possibly fall short this year, looking at the offense, and the numbers are definitely, you know, in the lower half of the league. All of the injuries to the bullpen, you can certainly argue that is a big reason why they haven't been able to sustain any success. But I think the biggest reason why this team has not been able to go on winning streaks, the biggest reason why this team has faltered this year, is Zach Eflin and Nick Pivetta. And Jake Arrieta probably as well, although with Arrieta it's injury related. But I think Zach Eflin and Nick Pivetta are the biggest reasons why this team, if they don't make the postseason, those will be the reasons why. The Phillies now 18-27 this year. It's a .400 winning percentage in games that Eflin or Pivetta have appeared in. They're now 46-32. That's a .590 winning percentage in all other games. So they're winning 59% of the games in which Zach Eflin and or Nick Pivetta do not appear in. And so with Eflin taking Arrieta's spot in the rotation, he has to be better than he was on Saturday if they're going to do this. I mean, he's a guy that you look at him pitch, he can't put hitters away. He gets ahead, he has nothing to put hitters away with, and San Diego hitters, and he gave up another hit to a starting pitcher. I mean, over his, what is he? That's like the, I saw a stat that he's given up more hits to opposing pitchers this year than any. I think he's given up like 10 hits to opposing pitchers this year.
I love it.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Over his last 7 starts, Eflin has only pitched 30 innings. He's averaging 4.1 innings per start over his last 7, with a 10.04 ERA over his last 7 starts. And then you have Nick Pivetta, who came in and gave up the. So Eflin, by the time he'd left, the score was 3-3. Pivetta comes in, gives up 2 runs. Pivetta now on the season has a 5.42 ERA, a 5.5 FIP. His strikeout numbers are way down, 8.2 strikeouts per 9 compared to 10.3 last year. Walk numbers are way up, 3.4 walks per 9 compared to 2.8 last year, and he's given up nearly 2 home runs per 9 innings. I mean, these are two guys, this is 2/5 of the preseason starting rotation that has been utterly useless, Justin.
Yep. And you knew this, I don't want to say you knew this going in, but if you were someone who said this team didn't pick up enough starting pitching to help itself out down the line, then you were perfectly within reality to say that. I mean, he came into this season with an ERA over 4 at Citizens Bank Park. I mean, we don't not know who Nick Pivetta is. We don't not know who Zach Eflin is. And there's been some fluctuation over the years about their health, about adjustments they're making. They're still young and everything. But you know, we kind of had that meltdown a couple of weeks ago saying we're just sick of these guys because, you know, I wanted to see it work out for them. It didn't. And now we're just dealing with this kind of ambiguous wad of pitching at the back of the rotation that's, for the most part, ineffective. And, you know, you want to see it work out. It just it didn't. And the stats are there. The eye test is there.
Yeah, the
I mean,
test,
you're right
yeah.
about Eflin. What is Eflin? Like, Velasquez was always like, oh, okay, he's got that velocity that's so attractive, and you want to see that, you know, control get there so that he's not throwing 40 pitches by the second inning. Pivetta came into this season with high hopes. Eflin, what is Eflin's out pitch? What has his specialty been since the start? Like, you're right, he can't get guys away. He had problems with his knees, and now it's just Pivetta goes out there and just starts throwing fastballs down the middle. I mean, that doesn't matter if you're coming out of the pen or in the rotation. You're going to get hit.
Yeah.
You're
going
to get knocked around. I'm sorry, man. Your stuff's just not powerful to blow right past guys, especially seasoned hitters who have now at this point seen you a bunch of times because you've been around for a while.
Yeah.
So, at this point, the Phillies, when they look back on this season and what they could have done to prepare a little better, we were all just fixated on whether or not this team was going to sign Bryce Harper. And in the meantime, they really didn't do enough to help themselves out with the starting rotation. Deciding to go with what they had was, that wound up being their downfall. You know, think about this team with an improved, just one more spot or two more spots improved in the rotation from outside talent being acquired. You know, that's probably a couple more wins. Like, probably keeps them in a few more games. That's those games where the offense doesn't show up. Maybe you have a more talented number two or number three guy in there who's able to hold up a two or three run lead. You know, but they don't have that. They have a couple of guys who just can't come into close games, who can't pitch close games, who can't go deep into games, who can't get batters out. I mean, how many times are we going to watch that happen this year? So, yeah, I'm with you. It's just the experiment is over.
Yeah. No, I think the Phillies have to be thinking that, too, for next year. I think one of the guys they will keep is probably Jason Vargas, who is under contract for next year. He's been pretty good for the Phillies. He's allowed two runs or fewer in three of his four starts, but the Phillies have only scored 5 runs for him in his 4 starts so far this year. And again, on Sunday, he pitched well. I mean, I think this is exactly what you expect from Jason Vargas. You can't expect anything more. Drew Smiley's gotten lit up, but Vargas has looked good.
Exactly. Even that is a luxury at this point.
Yeah.
Having a pitcher who you know out there and you can trust what they're going to throw you. I mean, that's the Phillies' dream situation. They went out there and acquired guys thinking that they were they searched for reliability a lot in pitching and in position players as they were acquiring talent this offseason. And also learned the hard lesson that that's a tough thing to plan around. But when you have a guy like Jason Vargas, who you know is going to go out there and he's not going to throw a no-hitter, he's not going to take a shutout into the seventh inning, but he's going to give you a chance. And the Phillies don't even have the pitchers who can give them a chance consistently. They're either going to, you know, maybe they can hold back an offense one day, but they're also very more likely going to get lit up the second or third time through the lineup.
Yeah, Vargas is this team's number two starter right now.
Yep, and we said that when he was acquired, that he immediately zoomed up to the number two spot.
So let me ask you this then. So, I mean, I mentioned a minute ago that I thought Pivetta and Eflin are the biggest reasons why, if this team misses the playoffs, they will be the two biggest reasons why, but there's obviously a lot. What do you think is the biggest reason why, if this team misses the playoffs? Is it the offense not performing as well? Is it Eflin and Pivetta, or is it the whole starting rotation? Or is it the bullpen? Is it the injuries to the bullpen, the bad luck, or maybe even bad luck with the McCutchen injury and all the injuries to the relief pitchers? I know it's a combination of those
and
things.
I can only pick one. Okay,
you can only pick one.
I gotta go with the rotation. I think they had an opportunity to perhaps just enhance it, and even the ways that they did at the trade deadline, to have done that in January might have even made something of a difference. And for a team that's, you know, going down to the wire a game or two out of a wild card spot, if that's really what the goal is, then, you know, hey, that probably is the difference. You're dealing with a Jake Arrieta as your number two for a lot of the season with bone spurs in his arms. You know, you're dealing with an Aaron Nola who did not look like Aaron Nola for the entire first half. I mean, that leaves you just with nothing. We've watched a lot of teams without a stopper in Philadelphia for a long time. And when that bleeding starts and it doesn't stop and there's nobody who you can trust to go out there and, like, give you 7-8 strong innings and shut a team down just to get everybody back on track, you can enter into these downward spirals so easily. And, you know, pitching is it's obviously more fun to watch Bryce Harper hit grand slams to Camden across the river. But, like, this team didn't improve its pitching, and that's the backbone of winning these close games, that they're not winning. You know, they can't go out there and rely on an offense every time, even when they go out and acquire the kind of talent that this team has put together. So I do look at the bullpen. You know, this weekend Mike Schmidt referred to Hector. I think I heard him call him Hector Hold'em, and I was like, all I could think when he said that was, what a catchy nickname.
Yeah, I wish like it Hector was Hold'em.
I wish it was at all accurate. Like, I wish we could call him that, because we can't. Because even when he does, you know, make a save, he's allowing runners on. He's walking guys. He's letting, you know, hits are happening. Guys are getting on base. It's a terrible habit for a closer to have. You really shouldn't be a closer. You really can't be a closer if you're regularly letting runners on base, because you're going to give up runs eventually.
Yeah.
And he has, and he's blown saves. So to imagine this season with like a healthy David Robertson in that role, I think that makes a huge difference too. But I think in the long run, having for the first half of the season, having five guys who play a crucial role, like the most important role in a baseball game, be totally untrustworthy for the entire first half of the season, as opposed to one guy at the end of the bullpen in games where, like, the Phillies, you know, they might have him out there pitching in games that he doesn't necessarily even going to pick up the save. They don't necessarily need the closer's best stuff to win every day. They do need a starter's best stuff to win every day.
And just some quick injury news for people who aren't aware. David Robertson is getting Tommy John surgery, so it looks like he will be out for all of 2020. He seemed to indicate on Twitter that he wanted to try and make a contribution next year, but I don't know how that's going to happen. It's a 14 to 16-month recovery. So David Robertson becomes this era's Danny Tartable free agent signing, not through no fault of Robertson's own. And, you know, I can't really blame Matt Klentak for this particular move. I blame him for not maybe getting a little bit more help for the bullpen, for only getting one guy. And then they got Juan Nicasio, but Nicasio's terrible. They thought they had enough with Hunter and Nashak and the young guys, but obviously all those injuries were a crusher. But they got Robertson, a guy who had been so durable over the last 8 years. Something we don't factor in enough is bad luck. I mean, the McCutchen and Robertson injuries are just bad luck. And that factors into it too. And you gotta fight through that stuff, but those were two key players to lose.
Absolutely. And it's easy to imagine this season with those two guys installed in much longer roles. We'll never see David Robertson in a Phillies uniform, I'm pretty sure, on the field. And, you know, hopefully McCutchen comes back next year. He's going to be 33 and coming back from a pretty serious injury, so you don't want to make any assumptions. I know we all love having him around, so, you know, I don't want to think about that. But yeah, it is. It's a little devastating, honestly. Like you can't. I mean, that's what I said when if they want to go out and acquire talent based on how a guy's health has been over the course of their careers. Okay. I mean, that doesn't make no sense. But at the same time, this is a team that starts Roman Quinn all the time.
Well, not for a little while. Roman Quinn's back on the injured list for the third time this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also, this is the part of baseball you can't plan around. Like, you can't. It's chaos out there. And, you know, as a GM, the best you can do is roll the dice with the guys you think are going to help the team, ideally. I know in some cases GMs are saying, like, oh, yeah, they say they're doing that, but they're really just like, well, let's just see what happens and then, you know, go through the draft and rebuild and, you know, we're going through our whole other thing over here. But in the case of the Phillies, you know, yeah, you can't blame Klentak for those particular signings, because those are things that are just crazy. And unfortunately, what people do in that situation is look for blame. And, like, Klentak will get blamed for Robertson. There was that point in time where people were trying to blame Gene Segura for not busting it out of the box for causing Andrew McCutchen's injury. I mean, there's just nobody to blame. And I think that's what makes it so frustrating, because there's no direct solution to that problem. It's just sort of like, it happens, it happened, mm-hmm. Get over it.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, there's just nothing to be done here. And if this was a fairy tale season for the Phillies, like we all imagined, then it would be like a next man up situation. And the next guy off the bench is like Nick Williams. And it turns out, hey, whoa, Nick Williams made an adjustment. Suddenly he's a prolific major league hitter. But you know what? That didn't happen either. So we're just kind of in this point where it's like, well, none of the Phillies prospects really panned out as well as people were hoping. The pitching didn't improve and they got some really bad luck. I mean, it's when you look back on the season, we're going to dissect it, and there's going to be reasons for things, like I said, that we don't know about that surface. But at the same time, if you want to throw the fault of this season into bad luck, it it gets a reasonable, it's a reasonable amount of blame.
Yeah. It can get in line. There's no doubt about it. It can get in line and raise its hand as an active participant in 2019. When we come back, I don't know if you remember this or aware of this, Justin, but Players Weekend is next week, and there's a they're going to be wearing all black uniforms. The Phillies are wearing all black uniforms with nicknames on the back of the jerseys. I'm going to run a few of these nicknames by you and get your thoughts on these. That'll be up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So this coming weekend, I had the dates right in front of me here in my little calendar. On the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of August, so a week from this coming week, it's going to be Players Weekend, which is that weekend when basically nothing changes except players wear uniforms with funny names on their back. Really, they try to make this a whole big weekend, but it's really just... It's their regular games, just with different uniforms. And I'm looking over the Phillies players' nicknames, and kind of boring. I mean, Jose El Alvarez is El Lave, which means key in English. It's a colloquialism from Venezuela, referring to people who are friends with one another. Like, you know me, so you have access to me. You have the key. Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I don't dislike
that. It's fine. Jake Arrieta is Snake. Jay Bruce is Bruce. Corey Dickerson is CD. Zach Eflin is EF for some reason. F. Oh, F. Okay, I got it. I had to sound it out. Bryce Harper is Harp. So, I mean, not terribly creative with some of these nicknames. Cesar Hernandez is using Cesita again, which means Little Caesar. He's used that every year. Rhys Hoskins is using Big Fella. Scott Kingery is Jetpacks, which I think is cool. That's a good one.
You know, if they only did the uniform thing for the two teams playing in Williamsport for the Little League Classic,
yes,
I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Doing it across the sport is just them being like, well, are these jerseys even going to be for sale?
They must be, right? Yeah.
So, okay, it's just a merchandising grab. Because you're right, nothing changes about the other team. I mean, an increased awareness, I guess, of the Little League World Series is, you know, and I know we're going to get into that. I mean, that's always good, I guess, but this is, you know, that's minimal compared to the merchandising grab that this clearly is.
I will tell you the one that I really like. Well, Andrew Knapp is always good with nap time, but the one I really like is Brad Miller's. Todd Zielecki wrote this up for MLB.com. The name he's going to have on the back is Jay Windermere. And here's the background for this. Miller grew up in Windermere, Florida, which has been the home of Ken Griffey Jr., Tiger Woods, Shaquille O'Neal, Prince Fielder, and others. When Miller made the Mariners as a rookie in 2013, teammates called him Silver Spoon and asked if he took a pay cut when he signed with Seattle and got off his allowance. They asked if his butlers gassed up his jet skis, because baseball players are really hilarious like that. Willie Bloomquist, who played with Miller in Seattle from 2014 to 15, started to call him Johnny Windermere. The Mariners arrived at hotels on the road, and Bloomquist submitted Johnny Windermere as Miller's alias. Former Phillies left fielder Raul Ibanez played with Miller in 13. Ibanez was in Philadelphia earlier this month for the reunion of the 09 National League Championship team and passed all of this along. And Ibanez apparently said to Miller, he asked me if the butlers and chefs were doing well. So apparently Jay Windermere is due to the fact that Brad Miller is apparently loaded, or that he comes from money, I guess, is kind of funny. I like that one.
Yeah, there's a nice story behind it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
great.
but I mean, yeah, these things are just kind of like Blake Parker is Be Easy, Nick Pivetta, Piv, Roman Quinn, PSJ, which stands for Port St. Joe, where he was, where he's from, was hit by Hurricane Michael last year. So, I mean, JT Realmuto is Real, Sean Rodriguez, Chichi, which just dates back to golfer Chichi Rodriguez, El Mambo for Gene Segura, Drew Smiley is Smiles. I like Ranger Suarez here, Justin. Chupete, which means pacifier in English. And all Zielecki mentioned is this was a late change, so it's unclear why Suarez chose this one.
This is a late change.
And then Vince Velasquez, V-squared, Jason Vargas with Vargy. But that's it. Those are the players' weekend names. I'm not getting a number three jersey with Harp on the back. If I'm getting a number three Harper jersey, it's going to say Harper on the back. Because, you know, 10 years from now, no one's going to know what Harp is.
Right. I mean, honestly, this is where I'm at on this. If I, and I think there would be some pushback on this, but I'm of the mind that really there's points during this season where something like players, there's some toxicity coming from players, or we learn of some terrible thing that happened within a team's organization, or fans are behaving like idiots, and you just kind of like you get an event like the Little League World Series in Williamsport, and it's just like, you know what? Maybe kids should be the only one who play this game. And I wrote something for Short Relief last year on Baseball Prospectus about how, can you imagine a world where like the level of the Little League World Series, if that was just considered Major League Baseball, and you could take your kids to see older kids play a game that they could much more potentially be playing themselves and not think like, yeah, maybe someday, but no, because it's, you know, it's a major league, it's a professional sport. And instead of having to deal with like guys like Jose Reyes or the Odubel Herrera story that came out this year from the Phillies, you're just watching kids like Big Al from last year, Monet
great.
Davis.
Yeah.
Or some of the players from this year. And, you know, like that's, I wound up writing a story about it last year about how Williamsport is this little town in the middle of Pennsylvania where so many of these baseball stories just begin, whether it's in the Little League World Series or it's the Williamsport Crosscutters at the bottom of the Phillies minor league system, where a lot of guys show up when they're like in their late teens, early 20s, and they don't know if they're going to make it. And the fans just wanted a local ball team, and they may not even know who's going to be on it a day or two before opening day, but they come out and they want to see the Crosscutters play because Williamsport's a real baseball town. So I don't know. It does help see the purity in it a little more, and it makes it more fun because, you know, Liz and I talked about this year, what if you had adults out there shagging fly balls in the home run derby at the All-Star game? And I was just like, no, you can so easily envision that getting ruined by guys elbowing each other and trampling each other or just thinking about what they had to do when they get home from what they're doing now. Kids are just more fun to watch play baseball. Yeah. You know, there's a reason it's like a fountain of great feel good stories every year because they, you talk about playing the game the right way. They're playing the game the right way because we refer to it all the time as a child's game. And there's a reason for that because they're the only ones playing it the right way.
Yeah.
So yeah. Any further exposure of the Little League World Series, I think is a good thing. So like I like that they are doing a full weekend addressing it on the major league level. Obviously, there's a huge amount of cash grabbing involved. They wouldn't be doing it if there wasn't. I think it's cool they do the Little League Classic. Who is it this year? The Cubs and the Pirates.
Yeah, they're playing tonight. Yeah, for the Little League Classic. Yeah.
Right. So you know it's cool. It's all great. I'm a big fan of the Little League World Series. I can't say I'm going to watch a whole lot of it, but I think it's awesome that it exists and they're doing this. But yeah, the rest of this is just like, whatever, guys. I'm sure when they're like, okay, everybody needs to submit a nickname, some guys are like, I don't know, what's the first syllable of my last name? That's what they call being college. Just go with that.
Yeah, that's whatever my last name is with a Y on the end. Let's roll with that. Because baseball players are not like NBA players. They're not terribly creative. They're not big on social media. They're pretty boring guys for the most part. There's a few that are fun and interesting and get creative. But, you know, what's interesting about the Little League World Series is I was never a big fan of the Little League World Series because I was worried that it put too much pressure on the little kids and that it over-glorified little kids playing a game and kind of took advantage. But I don't feel that way about it now. And I was watching it with my 8-year-old who's now getting into, you know, who's been playing Little League for a couple of years now. And he was doing machine pitch in the fall, in the spring. And now in the fall, he's for the first time doing kid pitch. And he's 8 and he's playing with 9 and 10-year-olds mostly on his team. And so it's going to be a learning curve. But he was fascinated to learn that the Little League World Series, first of all, exists, and second of all, that it's on TV, and he can watch it. He's watching kids like 5 years older than him play, and now he's like, he is juiced for it. And he's got a lot. He's the odds of my son ever playing in the Little League World Series is unbelievably remote, and but that's not why he's excited watching it. He's excited watching kids play baseball, and they're good examples to him. So, and it's a way for me to tell him, you know, how hard these kids have to work in order to get to where they are. You know, as hard as you're working in practice, you know, when you're goofing off in practice and not really paying attention, it's all business for these kids. I mean, they're having fun, but part of the fun is getting good and learning how to play the game. I was able to kind of drive that lesson home a little bit as we watched the Little League World Series this weekend. And so I've done a 180 on the Little League World Series. I wasn't a big fan of it in the past, but I'm all in now.
Yeah, and another interesting part of it last year was talking to Mitch Rupert, who he works in the Williamsport Sun Gazette, and he talks about covering it, and he's just like, you know, if you've never been there before, you know, if you've never seen it, it's definitely something to go do. It's definitely something to go see. It's an experience that's definitely worth having. But he's also like, we are a small town newspaper that has to cover this global event that's like right at the cusp of high school football season starting. So we got a huge kickoff season for section for that as well. He's like, if they moved it, I wouldn't really mind. You know, they just give another town a chance one year. And it's totally understandable. And yeah. This year I just saw him tweet casually like, oh, they gave the kids thunder sticks. Like, just...
Great idea. Yeah, because there's never enough kids making noise in the stands. You need help. Well, anyway, it's good luck to the kids. There's a lot of great stories, like you mentioned. Some of them
good
will
luck
come
to
out.
Mitch.
Yeah, good luck to Mitch. Godspeed, my friend. All right, as we wrap up episode 311 here, Justin, any final thoughts?
You know, it's tough not to focus on what every win means, but you know, watching that Grand Slam and watching it with Chris and just seeing the reaction. First of all, Chris is Chris is banned from Twitter for a reason, but he's also always been a great model of what a fan is. I think to me, like so often now, we're all on Twitter, we're all starting blogs, we're all thinking, well, maybe I can like maybe build a career out of like being a baseball analyst of some kind, or you know, just join in that circle, and you kind of forget just to enjoy yourself as a fan. And Chris is somebody who I think has really landed in that proper space of like, you get out of this what you put into it. And yeah, his reaction, his excitement in that clip, it's all genuine. If you know Chris, you know there's no reason to suspect otherwise.
No.
And you know, it does, it hurts to let a team hurt you, but it's just nice to see it pay off, see your fandom, see your investment emotionally pay off like that, in a moment like that. So hopefully the Phillies give us a few more moments like that as we head into the final stretch. I know we're down on this team, and we have been for most of the season, but you know, at the end of the day, it's supposed to be fun to be a fan. It's not our job to fix the team. It's our job to try and enjoy the team. So, you know, if you can do that, then I think that's a great place to enter September as we enter the season's final month in 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's great perspective, and you're right. Only one team wins the World Series every year, so I guess you hope you get enough memories out of that season to kind of last you until you're lucky enough to actually do that. And, you know, maybe the Phillies do that here over the last month and a half of the season. But anyway, so disappointing series against the Padres. As we mentioned, the Phillies have an off day on Monday. They get a two-game series against the Red Sox in Boston at Fenway Park. Always fun to see the Phillies play in Fenway. Last year they had a two-game series in Boston, played them really well, split the two-game series. We'll see how the team does when they go up to Boston to start that series on Tuesday. That'll do it for episode number 311 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin Clue for being with us, and again, congratulations to Liz and her new husband Sean for their nuptials this weekend. We're looking forward to having Liz back on the podcast as soon as possible, and don't forget, folks, to check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittinseason, and tell a friend about the Good Fight podcast feed and about Hittin' Season continued success and the Dirty Inning, which you'll find at the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcast. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.